I like Rick Rule. Rick is a, let's say, good business friend, and I like the way he says it. Buy it when everyone hates it. So right now, silver is around 60, 70 US dollar. Look at the silver mining companies. They are all brutally down from their all-time highs. And that's a chance on the producer side, but even more on the, as I said, exploration and development side, to position yourself. And if everybody joins in again in a couple of months or maybe 1 or 2 years, I don't know when the hype is going to come back, but it has to come back because we need those metals on a global scale. You are positioned and you can sell when everyone else is buying. That's our approach there.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks. I have with me Jan Vilhoeft. And Jan is a part of, he's a partner with Axino Capital. Jan, great to have you here today. How are you?
Steve, thank you for inviting me. I'm doing very well. Thanks.
Jan, for those who don't know who you are, if you can just tell us a little bit about you, a little bit about Axino Capital, and why we're here together today.
Absolutely. So Axino Capital was founded like 30 years ago from my business partner, Wolfgang. He is the one with the gray hair, and he has been actually the first German person to attending PDAC in Canada. And since then, he has always invested in junior mining stocks, starting from exploration. And he has been very successful in the beginning. And early 2000s, some people in Germany asked him, hey, can we also invest in those type of companies? So he decided to found an IR agency, a media agency, if you like. And we have been representing numbers of companies, up to Agnico Eagle in the past here in Europe. And nowadays, we are really A, investing in junior mining stocks. That's our core focus. B, we are representing them. But we also have a big German YouTube channel where we educate the German, let's say, general investors on why you should buy gold, why you can make money with mining stories. Because it's not very common, you know. We have been shutting down our mines like 40 years ago here in Germany, which was a big mistake. But now it's coming back, and that's where we are in positioning our industry here in Europe.
Yeah, and you're in Germany right now, and you work with, I don't know if you work primarily with European investors, but I'm kind of curious as to maybe how someone like yourself, or maybe how you've seen the thought process be different from what you've seen over there versus kind of maybe what I'm used to here.
Yeah, probably. You see, in North America, investing in mining stocks is part of the DNA. That's the same when I talk to Australians. That's what they are used to, what they invest in, because it's so common. As I said in the beginning, we have been shutting down our mines like 40 years ago, and everybody in Germany was like, well, why should I care about natural resources? It's so dirty. It's not environmentally friendly. You know, all the ESG criteria, they just doesn't fit to mining. I mean, you dig into the ground. That's simply not good for the environment, but it's needed, right?
Yeah.
And like some years ago, I think in 2018, I've been attending a show here, and we've been talking about mining and investing. And a woman approached me, and that was really my way of my point of changing the way I think about it. Because a woman approached me and said, "It's also dirty. I have an EV vehicle and solar panels on my roof. I don't want to hear anything about bad, environmentally unfriendly mining." And then she left. And I was like, wow, she's really stupid. I mean, you cannot have an EV vehicle. You cannot have solar panels. You cannot have anything. You cannot even charge your phone without our industry. And that was really the key trigger for me, where we said we have to address that. And now people starting to change because we have seen, okay, we are losing the cheap gas from Russia. And now we don't want Russian gas, but what are we doing? We are importing gas from the US. That's also not very environmentally friendly because it has to be shipped over the entire ocean. And now we see, well, with the war in Iran, well, everything is getting more expensive. And now people are starting to understand the need for metals. And even in the industry, and that was why I was talking for so long on your point. In the industry, nobody cared about mining. It was so easy to get all of your resources. But now it's getting harder. And I think that's the very important difference between a European investor and a, let's say, North American investor. We are really feeling and recognizing the war is going on a global scale. I'm not talking about Ukraine and Russia. I'm not talking about Iran. I mean, really, the war underneath where the mainstream is not talking about it. The Chinese and the Eastern world against the US and the Western world, right? The Chinese, they have been securing metals for 20 years now all over the planet. You guys, you have your metals in the ground at home. You just have to dig them out. I mean, you have to explore them. You have to invest. You are still behind, but we don't really have anything. So for us here, it's on how to strategically position yourself, not just as an investor, but also as an industry for the future. And I think, Steve, to give you our thesis, really the core message that I want to give away for our interview, I don't want the people watching 20 minutes and not giving the core message, it's really we will see a big shift, which is very important for all of our investors and everybody who is investing in junior mining. I think we have seen over the last decades always, well, banks investing in mining stories. And that is going to change. Now we have to look for the industry. Because especially the European car makers, the European chemical makers, the whole European industry, they have to look for the metals. We now saw that Samsung is getting silver from, I think it's Silverstorm, right? We see so many pieces and puzzles that we see that the industry here in Germany and in Europe, they have to invest into the mining industry, either with offtake agreements or with direct investments into the projects or equity. And we will see that big shift in a couple of years. And I'm very sure that we will see a lot of progress in that direction, just like we have seen Gunnison Copper with Rio Tinto, I believe, and Amazon is now getting the copper from Gunnison directly. And that's just the beginning, and we will see more like this, even with names nobody has on the radar, and especially here from Europe, because we need those metals. And that's a different way of thinking, and we will see that in the future.
Jan, you're with Axino Capital. How do you assess where to invest? I mean, are you guys big on gold? Is your silver thesis? I mean, what are you most excited about, or what do you find most compelling?
I mean, for us, it's always gold, silver, copper, also a little bit uranium. Why is that? Especially the first three, because it's easy to understandable also for the public. And if something is easy to understand, then you get more momentum, more traction, and more people that are investing. And especially silver has been something we have been very bullish on. When nobody believed in silver, we have been a big believer in, let's say, 2024. We have been heavily into silver. We made good profits. Now, silver is back. Well, we are, let's say, at 60, 70 US dollar right now. Everybody thinks that was it. But we think that's just the beginning. We will see a lot of higher silver prices. It will go way higher in the future. I cannot tell you when, and I cannot tell you where we are going, but the triple-digit silver, as our friend Keith Neumeyer likes to say, that is something we should prepare for in the future. And that's also something on the mining side where we are going to look at. So our approach right now, Steve, is to look for interesting mining projects, especially precious metals, in the, let's say, late stage exploration / early development phase, because those type of companies haven't really benefited from the bull run we've seen so far. I mean, the generalist has been invested into gold, and the generalist bought some gold names like Agnico, Barrick, Newmont, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the generalist sold them off once we saw the gold price coming back from 5,500 to 4,000 US dollar. And now the next wave will be the way for the exploration and development companies. So we look for projects with scale, projects in safe jurisdictions, and projects that are still under the radar. And there are a lot of those projects, and you can find them, especially in the US, Canada, but also Mexico. Mexico is waking up. And we see all this, the US, they want to invest money into critical resource stories. We just saw a new article today that the Department of War, I think, that they also want to invest into mining stories. And we just heard recently from a friend who is running a US critical materials project, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say the name, that the governmental side is actively looking not just to deploy money everywhere, but they want to be part of the equity. They want to invest into the either project or the companies directly, because they want to benefit from the gain in the future. I mean, that's a different way of thinking, right? They are not putting money everywhere. They want to benefit from the share price increase as well. And that's what we are focusing on. Critical minerals, gold, silver, all in the development stage, or mainly development stage and exploration phase in the US. That's our focus right now.
Jan, is there a certain jurisdiction you wouldn't touch, and do you have jurisdictions that you are more favorable towards? If you can tell us a little bit about your bias there, and you know, in terms of upside silver, I mean, upside or leverage goes both ways. I mean, we also know that silver is very volatile. I didn't hear Keith Neumeyer talking about four digits, but if you can if you can expound on that, what the conversation was like.
Sure. So. Let's start with where to invest and where not. We have never been invested in China or in Russia, simply because it's a different way the government runs and you cannot predict it, right? So that's one criteria. We are surprisingly we have been very successful in some African countries like the DRC. We have had great successes. For example, we have been early investors also on Moto Gold Mines, which is today's Barrick's Kibali mine, one of the most successful mining operations from Barrick Gold. So you can make money in those jurisdictions, even nowadays. But certainly in Western parts of Africa, like Mali and Burkina Faso, you have to be a little bit more cautious, and I wouldn't invest there because there are so many opportunities. For example, Mexico. Nobody believed in Mexico, and I think still we have some doubters on Mexico, but you should have a look at Mexican assets. Mexico needs mining. They still have the trouble with issuing open pit licenses, but we have seen Silver Tiger Metals, we have seen GoGold, they got their license, and I'm pretty sure it's just the beginning. There's more to follow, and before everybody rushes into Mexico again, I encourage people to take a look, because we have a lot of interesting companies there in Mexico. In terms of silver and volatility, I believe the upside is huge. But as you said, you have to be cautious because it's volatile. I like Rick Rule. Rick is a, let's say, good business friend. And I like the way he says it. Buy it when everyone hates it. So right now, silver is around $60-70. Look at the silver mining companies. They are all brutally down from their all-time highs. And that's a chance on the producer side, but even more on the, as I said, exploration and development side, to position yourself. And if everybody joins in again in a couple of months or maybe 1 or 2 years, I don't know when the hype is going to come back, but it has to come back because we need those metals on a global scale. You are positioned and you can sell when everyone else is buying. That's our approach there.
So, you mentioned Rick Rule and how he loves what people hate. If you can tell me a little bit about kind of the different either jurisdiction, you mentioned Mexico, maybe that's a little bit misunderstood, where maybe you see an opportunity because people, you know, don't understand Mexico. Or in terms of certain commodities, whether it's silver or you mentioned other commodities that you are invested in. How do you assess what people hate? And then if people hate, does that necessarily translate to therefore I love it? Or like what criteria do you look for? And then what do people hate that you love?
Yeah. So we always, Steve, have a look at the global scale. Let's have a good example with lithium, right? I cannot tell you if we will have different batteries in the future. I mean, we've been talking about, or we've been hearing about the Samsung solid state silver battery. It might come, it might not. But for now, lithium batteries are still the way to go. And when I look around, people hate lithium because some people made a huge amount of money. That's usually the insiders. And then the mainstream comes in and the people are starting to lose money because the cycle turns as soon as the mainstream comes in. That's normal. Now everyone hates lithium, but I wouldn't say buy only lithium, right? But when everyone hates it right now, and just on a global scale, thinking about EV vehicles, I give you a good example, Steve. I've been, let's say 2 years or 3 years ago, I've been to Beijing in China, for example. I've been to Shanghai, and I film a lot of videos. I could have filmed a video on the main street, because it was so silent. Everybody was driving EV vehicles. I was also in Thailand. And even in the jungle, I was calling an Uber. And the Uber was an e-vehicle in the middle of the jungle. So the Asian market for e-vehicles is very, very strong. And it will also come to Europe sooner or later. And it's just a way of thinking. I mean, if everyone hates lithium, but there's still a big market, that's something I wouldn't say I love it and I put all my money into it. But at these levels, having a position in the lithium space, I think it's certainly a good way of doing it. So we are thinking more on a macro perspective. What makes sense in the future? We are not looking at headline numbers. We are looking at what's behind all of those. And it's as simple as that. As the moment gold crashed from 5,000 something down to 4,000 US dollar, you look at the global debt, you look at the deficit in the US, you look at the number of now 40 trillion US dollar debt, you look at the rates, you look at inflation numbers. It was quite clear that the gold price will come back. And that's our way of thinking. It's really a little bit more on the macro side instead of going into all the details all the time. That's a little bit of insights on how we work.
So we talk a little bit about gold and all this stuff that's happening in the world right now and why it makes sense, inevitable for gold to go up. And it's hard to see otherwise. Yeah. In terms of, you do a lot of junior companies and investing in mining companies. Why juniors as opposed to why do you see investing in junior gold stocks, for example, as being the right play for you guys? And then do you find it important to invest in other places as well?
I mean, you shouldn't put all your eggs into one basket. I think this is how you say it in the English language. Of course, it makes sense not to have 100% of your net worth in junior mining. That would be quite volatile and quite hard. But honestly, we love the juniors, the exploration and the development stories. And we love it as particular, as I said, in gold, silver and copper, because it's understandable and it's needed and it's always needed, right? Why? Because you have the big, big leverage. And we talked about how gold, the direction of travel, I think, is quite clear over the next few years. That's not an investment advice, but from our thesis, we are in the gold space since the year of 2000. And we look at the gold price and we've been quite right. And we believe it will go higher. Not next year. We won't be at 10,000 US dollar, hopefully not, but it will go higher. So looking at development stories, looking at the ounces in the ground, the value that's there, the mineable ounces, looking at the, let's say, mining cost, the all-in sustainable cost, and just running a little bit the numbers. And it gives you a perspective of how much value some junior mining companies have in the ground. And then you have a look at the market cap and you're like, well, there's a disconnect. I mean, there should be a disconnect, right? Because they're not a producer, because they're not making cash flow. That's all sure. But in the end, we see so many companies are getting sold off because of reasons that are solvable. I give you an example, and I hope I don't get blamed for name dropping here, but First Mining Gold is the company we talked about, Keith Neumeyer. I think he has been founding the company. We know those guys pretty well. There has always been an issue with getting the license for the big, big Springpole project. And we have been talking to the management, and it seemed like they know what they are doing. I cannot control if they get the license next year, this year, or in 10 years. But I can see the gold in the ground and I can run the numbers. So if the depreciation in the share price comes from not having the approval, the environmental approval, well, then I have only one thing to bet at. The gold is already there. It's just about getting the license. I think the downside was not so big over the last years. So we had a position there. And we have been betting on getting the environmental approval. The same thing actually also in Mexico. We have been heavily investing into Mexican open pit stories in the year of 2024 and 25 when Claudia Sheinbaum came into place. Because it was only one thing to bet at. Everything was already in place. And that's how we try to lower our risk. We don't want to be and let's say jurisdiction risk, permitting risk, also geological risk, and I don't know, getting like problems, not just on the government side, but also on the community side. But we want to lower the risk. And if the gold is already there and the gold price goes up and the inventory looks great and everything is perfect, it's just one piece of the puzzle missing, I think you have a very good risk-reward profile. And that's what we like as investors.
So I spoke with Rick from the Rick Roll Symposium. We were going through companies, and he was saying that he doesn't have a single company in his mind that checks all the boxes. What boxes are most important for you guys, and like, how do you assess that? And then with that, when you talk with companies, interviewing, CEOs, what do you think is the most important questions to be asking for me to go, this is a good company, this is a crappy company, and maybe this is an opportunity where, hey, this is undervalued, and either I want to avoid it, or hey, I know about this before everybody else does. Like, what questions kind of go through your mind that you can kind of share with us?
Yes, I think we have one or two very important criteria. Of course, it is good if the geology is great, right? But most of the investors out there, especially our viewers, I would bet, are not geologists. I'm not even a geologist by background. We have one in our team, but I personally, I'm not a geologist. So when I talk alone without a geologist to CEOs, my most important question is always, first of all, what as a CEO and management team, what have you guys done before? Because it gives me a perspective. Are they competent or not? Are they qualified for the current hurdles that they have in the company? Can they solve it? Have they ever been able to get a license or not? Have they ever been able to get license or not? Have they ever found something, gold, silver, copper or not? And the second most important question is, do you have own money in the company? And I don't want a CEO to say, oh, I got 10% of the company. Well, that's great. But are we talking about founding shares? Are those shares that you bought at the beginning for like 1 cent and now the company is at $1? I want to know, do you have hard dollars? Just like myself, if I put in hard dollars, I'm not getting anything for free. Are you betting on your company? And then if we're talking about a very, very successful CEO who has been successful in the future, in the past, if he tells me he got $50,000 in the company, for example, but he made hundreds of millions, I'm overshooting here just to get the picture, right? It's peanuts. I would love to have a management that's in the risk, that is believing what it's doing, and they are betting on their own success. Because in the end, I'm investing my capital in that person. I'm not investing it into the ground. It's that very person that I'm talking to who's responsible for my money and my success. He cannot control everything, but he can control if he wakes up every morning and does it his best. And that's what we need in the junior mining space. You cannot make money with someone who is running 7 companies by himself. Again, I'm overshooting here just to show the clearer picture. Yeah. You need the guys that are involved in their own story and are believers.
Speaking of believing in your own story, I spoke with someone. He said, that's my number one criteria is the way he phrased it. I forget who it was, but I remember it clearly. He said, I want to invest in companies where the CEO's spouse will leave them if the company fails. They're so heavily invested. They burn all their boats. They have to make this work.
Better, yeah?
That's always stuck with me. It's like, is this a divorceable investment?
Yeah, so look with a CEO with a wife and not one who's single.
Well, Jan, if you can tell us a little bit about where we can find you guys, Axiono, as well as kind of what you do. I know that you also speak with a lot of people. If you can tell us where we can find you and follow you.
Sure. So our main label is Axiono Capital. We are also on YouTube, just like you. We are doing daily content, but it's in German. And I would assume most of the people here maybe don't speak German or they don't like the AI translation. But I also do interviews with guys like Keith Neumeyer, Rick Rule, and also company CEOs, and I ask them my kind of questions. And those are obviously in English, and they are also labeled with Axiono Capital on YouTube. So feel free to check it out, and I'm always happy to talk to people about mining and our industry.
Well, Jan, finally, it's nice to finally meet you. One last question before I let you go. You said the way we say it is all the eggs in one basket. What's your idiom over there?
Well, we would probably would say the same, but in the German language. So it's nothing very special I could add to that.
But it would still be an egg
It would
analogy.
probably still be an egg in the basket, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jan, great to meet you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.